Okay, we are going to start our series of going through the names of God. So we're going to talk about Emmanuel today. And I learned some new things. So I'm excited to share them. I like when you learn new things as you're going into stuff. I'm like, oh, I didn't know about this history and when it was first used. So we're going to be going, we're going to be looking at three sections. We're going to be specifically looking at Isaiah. So there's three places where Emmanuel specifically is used. Isaiah 7, Isaiah 8, and then Matthew 1. And those are the only places specifically that Emmanuel is used. And the one in Matthew is the one that says that, therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. Right, and so when the angel was talking to Joseph in the dream. And we know that that's a fulfillment of prophecy, so we're going to go back to Isaiah. But looking at the context of when God used that name Emmanuel and why he used it, and then as he prophesied Jesus and what it came out of, which I thought was quite fascinating. So we're going... Oh, great. Okay, so I didn't bring my Bible, and I planned to. Okay. Yes, do you have one? Okay, great.
Or do you want a physical Bible?
No, that's fine. I mean, somebody else can read too, which is fine. I should have brought it, but I was reading it on the computer screen. But anyway, so Isaiah, we're going to start in Isaiah 7. So if somebody could read for us Isaiah 7, 10 through 14.
I can.
Okay, Bethany.
Now?
Yep.
Okay. The sign of Emmanuel. Later, the Lord sent this message to King Ahaz. Ask the Lord your God for a sign of confirmation, Ahaz. Make it as difficult as you want, as high as heaven or as deep as the place of the dead. But the king refused. No, he said, I will not test the Lord like that. Then Isaiah said, listen well, you royal family of David. Isn't it enough to exhaust human patience? Must you exhaust, 10 to 14. Must you exhaust the patience of my God as well? All right, then, the Lord will give you the sign. Look, the virgin will conceive a child. She will give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us.
Okay. So I was thinking, like, I'm interested when I'm looking at stories, what's the historical context of this? Inspired. Because of Chaitin and how he is very good at breaking down what's happening, right? And he really digs deep into, you know, what's going on. So during this time when God, through Isaiah, is talking to King Ahaz, Ahaz is the king of Judah, and Judah is at odds and at war with Israel and Damascus. And Damascus is part of Syria. So Israel and Syria are at war with Judah. And God comes to him and says, ask, what do you want? What sign do you want? What pledge do you want about my loyalty to you? And King Ahaz uses an excuse of, oh, I would never test the Lord. So it sounds very pious, right? And he doesn't ask of anything of the Lord. And so God said, then I'll give you a sign. The sign that he chooses to give him is a baby. And Jesus isn't for 740 years later, okay? So it's interesting that that's the pledge that he gives. Now, King Ahaz decided to ask the Assyrians to help him win this battle against Israel and Damascus. So he allows the Assyrians to help him, and they demolish Israel and Syria, which Damascus is part of Syria. So they demolish them, just wreck them. We're going to read another section, but what happens then, Judah also gets hurt in the process because the Assyrians like, here's an open door for us to get close. We're going to say we're your ally, and yet we're not. So let's go into Isaiah 7. Oh, sorry, Isaiah 8. I can't read that. Isaiah 7, 1, or oh my gosh, Isaiah 8, 1 through 10. All right, so I'm going to kind of bring this down a little bit. So the Lord said to me, take a large scroll and write on it with an ordinary pen, Mahar Hala Hashbaz, and I will call it in Uriah the priest and Zechariah son of Jeberechiah as reliable witnesses for me. Then I went into the prophetess, and she conceived and gave birth to a son. And the Lord said to me, name him Mahar Hala Halal Hashbaz. I don't know how to say that. Before the boy knows how to say, my father or my mother, the wealth of Damascus and the plunder of Samaria will be carried off to the king of Assyria. So by that time that he's able to speak, they will be destroyed. Right? He's prophesying that that's going to happen. The Lord then spoke to me again. Because this people has rejected the gently flowing waters of Shiloah and rejoices over Rezin and the son of Remaliah, therefore the Lord is about to bring against them the mighty floodwaters of the river. So basically God was saying, and I didn't look up all those words in that context, but in the commentaries that I was reading, instead of accepting God's help in this, then there's going to be actually a different type of flood that is going to come in some punishment. And really what it is, it's in consequence of Ahaz making this alliance with the Assyrians. The king of Assyria, with all his pomp, it will overflow all its channels, run over all its banks, and sweep on into Judah, swirling over it, passing through it and reaching up to the neck. So, saying it's not going to get to the head, it's not going to completely obliterate Judah, but it is going to overwhelm Judah. Its outspread wings will cover the breadth of your land, O Emmanuel. Raise the war cry, you nations, and be shattered. Listen, all you distant lands, prepare for battle and be shattered. Prepare for battle and be shattered. Devise your strategy, but it will be thwarted. Propose your plan, but it will not stand, for God is with us, which is that Emmanuel, right? God is with us. So in this thing saying, you chose this, now this water is going to flood over you in destruction. And already saying before, like by the time this young baby is able to speak words, Israel and Damascus will be obliterated. And they are. They're just destroyed. Judah, God will protect the head of Judah. But saying also to the other, how do I say it? Also speaking to those other kingdoms that want to destroy Judah, I'm still going to protect them. So you can have all your plans and purposes for obliterating them as well, but it's not going to come to pass because I am God with them. So even though they chose another help and not God, God is still faithful to come near and to help them. Okay. But his prophecy and his pledge, when he says that, he's like, okay, well, I will give you a sign of my loyalty. I will give you a sign of my pledge. My pledge is that a baby will be born to a virgin. Like, that's it. That's what he says he's going to do, right? So 740 years later, Jesus is born and is a fulfillment of that prophecy. Some of the things in here that God is alluding to is that no plan will be successful against the divine kingdom. There are also consequences, but God still rules. So even though there's consequences for the actions of these people, God still rules, right? He is still Emmanuel. And saying that Jesus will be called Emmanuel, really what God was saying is Emmanuel with you. I am your protector. I am with you, right? So I am here. You chose not to reach out to me. I'm still going to show up. You've chosen this battle. You've chosen in this way. There's going to be consequences. The Assyrians are going to first obliterate them, yes, but you're going to get hurt in the process because now you've made an alliance with people who do not care about you, do not love you, and I gave you an opening. And in this religiousness, ooh, I would never test you. Like he throws back words of like, don't test the Lord your God. He's like, I would never test you. I would never do that. God's like, you're not testing me. You ask of me and I will show up. That was the covenant they had and he refused. So King Ahaz refused to do that. So one of the things that I was thinking, God would be with the nation as its protector, and the birth of this child would be a sign or pledge of that, a pledge that God is with his people. And what is the ultimate sign of God's presence? His son. And what's the ultimate protection? That he makes a way for us to be with him, right? that it's more than just the physical, right? And so this idea that nothing, that pledge, that sign did not come to pass during anything close to any of these people's lives, right? 740 years later, and then Jesus comes, then is a fulfillment of that prophecy. And when that is spoken to Joseph, that he will be called Emmanuel, basically he will be a protector. He is a fulfillment of my pledge that I will protect my people. And through all those years, and we had, what was it, the 400-year silence? Mm-hmm. Was that how long it was? 400 years of nothing from God, and then, you know, John the Baptist and, you know, things that happen leading up to Jesus. And so much time went between that of it feeling like God wasn't there, but he had this plan. Because his ultimate form of protection, his ultimate showing up, his ultimate being present was going to be shown in his son, right? Through his son's birth, life, death, and resurrection, we are then given life, which that is the ultimate. That's the ultimate protection. That's the ultimate, like, I love you. I will find a way for you to be mine. And so it's amazing to watch. I mean, God's faithfulness. So many times in the Old Testament, people continue to think that, like, oh my gosh, look at the horrific things that happened, right? And all these battles, all these things that God did. And some of it was because of the covenant that he had with his people. And he stepped into situations or also allowed situations to happen because they chose that. So these horrible things happen or they fell. And it's like, well, where was God? Wasn't he protecting? Well, it's like, he offered. You ask. Ask whatever you want right now. You're in a difficult situation. Ask whatever you want, and I will show up. And they chose to go for man's help instead of God's help. And there were consequences for that. And he showed up over and over again, continuing to reach out to his people, continuing to help them. You know, they chose different covenants, and he would switch and choose that covenant, though it wasn't going to be the best for them. It was going to be a lot harder for them. He stepped into that. And then we have Jesus so far past. So, interesting thought, like, why pledge that? Why say 740 years before that there will be a baby born to a virgin and you will call him Emmanuel? 740 years before that is actually going to take place. Because, I mean, in my thinking, like, God is, he's not confined to our time, right? And I look at my life and I'm like, okay, 42 years of living, and you feel like time is rushing, right? Or you feel like it's going too fast and all these different things. And it's like, but God is outside of that. And his plans and his purposes will be fulfilled. Like, he still is the ruler on the throne, right? And what he chooses to do and what he has put into place is going to happen. And that's why, like, incredible, like, that I keep saying it, but 740 years later, that prophecy is fulfilled. And the language is exactly the same, right? And there are people that try to deny and, you know, say that it's not a connection. But there's so many places, I mean, we know, but there's so many places in the Old Testament that are prophecies of Jesus. But in this one, think about when God gave it, his people right then were going to suffer. You choose not to ask for a pledge, I'll give you one. And this is what it is. A little baby's going to be born to a virgin. I mean, could you imagine, like, what that guy was thinking at that moment? What King Ahaz, what came into his mind? I mean, like, he put it, here's on his shoes, like, I'm at war.
How right? Is that going to do anything?
With Israel and Damascus, I need actual protection, and the Assyrians are going to do that. You're telling me a baby is going to be born to a virgin. Cool. How is that going to help me? Because God's ultimate plan is to win his people, right? And to actually win their hearts and to make a way for us to be with him for eternity. But in Ahaz, he's like, I can't see you in this. You know, I can't see your hand. I can't see your plan. I can't see your faithfulness. Though, throughout history, how many times has God been faithful to his people? Even up to that point. Over and over again. And rescuing. And yet they kept forgetting. They kept forgetting that God has been with them. But he's saying, I am God with you. I want to be the one to rescue you from this situation. I want to be the one to provide protection. And then there are consequences for that. But oftentimes when I hear Emmanuel, God with us, it just goes to Jesus but it really is pointing to a characteristic of God as protector, not just in Jesus, though that's the ultimate form of how he's actually protecting us, but it really, like, it's not just about baby Jesus being Emmanuel, you know, it's God being able to protect and be present and desiring that, and to be that, you know, for us. So, not a long message. So for those of you on the interwebs, hopefully that makes sense to you.